Ja, gute Woche. We are in. Chavis Halvavis, Shal Cheshbon HaNefesh. And what we're discussing here is how much effort and energy are you putting into Hashem's tasks? And how would you contrast that with the types of efforts you would put in if you're dealing with a mortal king. So we discussed this the other week, and we're not going to go through the whole length again of appreciating the parallel, even in our times when we don't have mortal kings. But the point is, if there was something that you had an opportunity to really make it big with someone that you think can really change your life, how much energy and effort would you be putting in? So the Chavis Halvavis wants to get us to a place of having this attitude toward our mitzvahs. And here, I believe this is where we left off last week, he started breaking up the different types of mitzvahs. And he said that there are three types of mitzvahs. And this is where we'll recap and start from there. There are three types of mitzvahs. There are mitzvahs that are primarily physical, meaning mitzvahs that we do with our bodies. Okay. Let's take just an example. We light Shabbos candles, okay? There are mitzvahs that are of the mind and heart. They don't involve the body. That is, your love of Hashem, your emunah, your yira, your bitachon, etc. And then there are mitzvahs that involve both, and this is what we're going to focus on now. Meaning, really, every mitzvah should involve the heart. But when we're talking about the essential definition of the mitzvah, the classic example of a mitzvah that involves both is tefillah, davening. Davening is something that we do with our mouth, but we all understand that the essence of davening is not recitation. Davening is an interaction with Hashem. Davening is an audience with Hashem, spending time with Hashem. And here is where he's going to get into davening as a classic case of the point he's trying to get across. And this is a very fundamental discussion. So let's see. Ach, I'm going to start from a little bit into Hacheshbon HaTshiʼi. When you are talking about things that are a matter of dealing with Hashem in your mind and heart, so we have to appreciate something. Just like you would come to any audience that you consider very momentous, be it with a potential employer or whatever it is, a shidduch date, anything else, you're coming to meet somebody that it's very, very important to you to make the right impression and where you stand to gain a lot or lose a lot as a result of this meeting. So you would make sure to look coming very presentable. You would put in the effort to make sure that you are clean, well-dressed, looking as good as you possibly can. And when we're talking about Hashem, the challenge is that it's not only about being presentable in terms of how you look, which is also important, that we have to be looking presentable when we come to daven. But with Hashem, your whole inside is also part of that encounter. When you're meeting, let's say, with a potential employer, you're hoping to get a job that can really change your whole reality. You make sure to look as good as you can. You make sure to talk as impressive as you can. You make sure to make as good an impression as you can. But if you can manage it, it's okay if in your mind you're busy thinking about all kinds of other things or even thinking about how ridiculous the guy looks. Right? That's
Didn't shake when davening. He stood still, you know, when we did it, when we said we couldn't stand before the king of the world, you know, he wouldn't stand and shake.
Oh, that's an example of a person living this experience. Yasher koyach. Yasher koyach. It's a good example. But the part of the idea is that it's not just about your body. It's about the understanding that you are presenting everything going on inside you also. So like we said, if you're meeting a potential employer, even if you're meeting a king, as long as you could put on the good front, as long as you're dressed decently and you're talking decently, etc. You can be busy planning in your mind the whole charade you're going to make about this guy, Purim time in the privacy of your family, right? And noting all of his ridiculous mannerisms, etc. He has no idea. He has no idea. But imagine if the person had X-ray vision into your mind. That would make the meeting a lot more intimidating. See, here the point is that when we're coming to address Hashem, we are actually putting our insides in front of him also. Now, okay, obviously no one's going to be thinking funny things about Hashem, Chas v'Shalom, but what is relevant is your mind can be in all kinds of other places. And here, what I thought sometimes think of it is in the following mashal. Now, this is going to be a little bit hard-boiled, the whole piece that we're going to see. Now, we're going to have to adapt it to our level. But first, let's connect to the discussion in theory, at least. So think of it as follows. Imagine if you have a person who desperately needs a donation of $100,000 in order to get himself back on his feet financially. Okay? And okay, he makes an appointment with someone who he thinks can help him. This person is known to be generous, makes an appointment, and he has to present his case well. So he writes it all up on a piece of paper. He writes it all up in a piece of paper, and this is a very stakey meeting for him. If he can get this loan of $100,000, he has a good chance at getting himself on his feet, really getting his business back successful, etc. If he doesn't get it, he might be facing financial ruin. So this is very important to him. So he sits down and he writes it all up in a very organized way, everything that he'd want to say, everything he'd want to express. And he's waiting in the waiting room. His appointment is going to be in another couple of minutes. And he had wanted to order pizza for supper tonight. Okay, and his phone rings with the pizza shop's number on it right as he's about to walk in. So one option is to press silence on the phone and he'll deal with the pizza afterwards. And if need be, they'll just have eggs for supper. But no, he really wants to have that pizza for supper. So he picks up the phone, walks into the meeting with this fellow. He's on the phone talking to the pizza shop guy. And he looks at the guy and he pulls out the paper where he wrote it all down. And still on the phone with the pizza shop guy, he hands the paper to the guy and goes like this. Right? And he's still talking to the pizza guy. And this guy's looking at him. Right? He points at the paper that he handed him. And what do you think? How do you think he'll do? He's going to be kicked out, right? So, again, if we want to just take this mashal and apply it to when we approach Hashem with tefillah, if we're just saying all the words while our mind is totally something else, that's actually what we're doing. Now, I want to be careful here because this is a harsh mashal. It's a harsh mashal. But I'm saying the mashal in order to get the concept and theory. Hashem accommodates our level. But let's appreciate the concept that Be'etzem, when you are coming and presenting yourself before Hashem, Hashem is the body is just the initial part of the meeting. But mainly what Hashem says, when we're ready to get down to business, Hashem says, okay, you look decent, fine. But when we get down to business, now it's about what's going on inside you. That's really where we're interacting. But if what's going on inside you is really somewhere else, was busy planning your trip next week, so it's mamish like that person. I can't help when a story comes to mind. I just say it, even if it's only partially related. But talking about making yourself presentable for a high-stake meeting, this really connects to a different issue that we saw. But I'll use it as an excuse because it connects to other areas in Shabbat B'Tochen. But there was a famous philanthropist in Europe, oh, in the late 1800s. His name was Reb Dunash. That was his name. And he was known, all the Rosh Yeshivas knew that they had an open door and an open ear by him, and he gave very generously. And But there was an interesting thing. One of the Rosh Hashivas picked up on this, that he gave everybody a nice donation when they came. But there was the altar of Novardok. I don't know if you've heard of him. His name was Rabbi Yoisel Horowitz, a very amazing profile. But he was the founder of the whole Novardok network. And he operated in different, well, very different ways than most people. His big thing was bitachon, like only interacting with Hashem and not. So, him, when he would come, this Reb Dunash would tell him, he would just open his safe. I guess that's how it worked in those days. So just take what you want. Basically, give him an open check. Take whatever you want. You decide the amount. It didn't work that way with the other Rosh Yeshivas. Everybody else got a nice donation, but Reb Dunash decided what the amount was going to be. Well, when the altar of Novardok showed up, he just told him, hey, you fill out the check, you take whatever you want. So one of the Rosh Yeshivas was like, oh, I was a little bit offended by this. Like, why does he get this different treatment? So the next time he was by this Reb Dunash, he said, do you mind if I ask you a question? I hope you won't find it offensive. No, go ahead. So he said, allow me to ask you, how come? Why is it that I very much appreciate the donations that you give me, but why is it that when he comes, you just give him an open check and you let him decide whatever he wants? Is there something different about him? Is there something greater about him? What is it? So the Reb Dunash looked at him and said, you asked my permission to ask the question straight. Do you mind if I give you the answer straight? Do I have your permission? So he said, yeah, go ahead. So Reb Dunash said to him, he said, look at you. You look very put together right now. You obviously prepared yourself for a meeting with Reb Dunash, the big, wealthy billionaire. You probably asked your wife on your way out if you look good. You checked in the mirror. You made sure that you looked as good as possible. And you came in here and you waited with a lot of Derech Eretz. You waited patiently in my waiting room. And you came in here and you spoke to me with a lot of Derech Eretz. He said, let me tell you how the Altar of Novadik comes to meet me. First of all, he doesn't make an appointment. He shows up. I can be in the middle of a meeting. He shows up with his shirt out. He'll bang on the door, open up, and say, I need you. That's how I'm in the middle of a meeting. He said, okay, fine, I'll wait outside for 5 minutes, but 5 minutes and I need to talk to you. And then he says, he barges in, sits down, he says, okay, so you have a lot of money. How much longer are you going to be here? What do you plan to do with it all? Give it to me, I'll invest a few in a good place where you'll enjoy it there too. So Reb Dunash said to this Rosh Yeshiva, he said, when you come in looking all perfect and having well prepared for the meeting, and you talk to me with all this Derech Eretz, you know what it makes me understand? Why is a Rosh Yeshiva talking to me with Derech Eretz? Apparently, money is very, very important. If money is so important, I want to keep most of it for myself. But when Reb Dunash comes in, when the Altar of Novardok comes in, it just gives me a feeling like, oh, come on, what are you going to do with that money already? And he shows his absolute disregard, like, says, he gives me the feeling of, oh, what's the money worth? Okay, so I tell him, whatever, take whatever you want. Okay, that's obviously a story that requires more elaboration, but it connected kind of, and then again to the issue of making yourself presentable if it's a high stake meeting. I guess each person has to decide what's for them a high stake meeting. I guess I confess that I probably would try to make myself presentable if I went there. But back to our subject. What's that?
I was going to say it is kind of a flip side because we are trying to make ourselves presentable. We are trying to stay connected. We are trying to think about not the pizza guy. The guy who was ordering pizza kind of came in with the shirt out and said, here, no, just give me what you want,
Right. No, no, no. He came presentable also. Just he showed the person that it's not where my mind is right now. Right. But you know what? Right. That's why I said we're going to have to adapt it to our reality. The first thing I'm trying to do is just get across the point. Meaning, in a theoretical world, we would want to view a tefillah without kavana as a very great form of disrespect. Now, that's in a theoretical world. At the end of the day, most of us are human. And therefore, we're going to have to take it at a human pace. Fine. We'll get to that. No question about that. I'm not coming to hold us up to standards we're not holding by. But I'm trying to present at least the theoretical way it should look. Okay. So now, He says as follows. So he says, Chayav, when you're actually about to approach Hashem, which is an issue that's a matter of your mind, which is again what tefillah primarily is. You have to try to clear your mind out of any other thoughts, any other preoccupations, and to have your mind totally focused to Hashem. Like there was a certain tzaddik who used to say in his tefillah to Hashem, Elokai, but tell me many how you're going this. My distress is over you. Meaning, I'm distressed over, am I going to make a good impression on you? That's my primary distress. And therefore, relieve me of any other distresses. My primary worry in life is, where do I stand with you? So therefore, distance from me any other worries. And if this is the approach of just showing Hashem that you are not just your body, but your mind and emotion, you are emotionally invested in the tefillah, that will make Hashem accept that tefillah. Well, whatever the mitzvah is, be it say, he'll find it pleasing.
Hashem is about to move to Holy, right? I've been advocating for a very, very long time. I get up in the morning, I am always stressed in the morning when I go to daven. And I've been advocating because I see a lot of our girls. They Friday night, they light candles and they're wearing a robe. And I tell them it's not the way, to be a Kabbalah Shabbos and whatever. And they say, why? It's a beautiful robe, it's so expensive. I said, tell me, would you go to the queen in a $1 million robe? You wouldn't. You'd get dressed. And this is I've been talking about for a very long time. And to women. And
Let them keep hearing it.
but
Let
they
them keep hearing it.
their numbers. They don't listen.
Well, you never know. You keep saying your thing, you don't know where you're having your impact. But let them hear it. Let me hear it too. Okay. Oh, sorry, that was my place. Okay. So therefore, but he comes back and says it's like this. When it comes to tefillah, you find a gufa mikol maaseh olam hazeh v'olam haba. You know what? Before we go on, I want to come back and talk and put this into the perspective that we need to have when we're approaching it. Like we're saying, if we're talking on the essential level, any word that you say to Hashem without proper kavanah is a chutzpah. Again, if we're barring the human element, okay, let's talk on the theoretical level. And we want to understand that. We want to be able to understand that and appreciate it. So why do we daven? He says later, we're opening ourselves up to the harsh treatment of the Chovos HaLevavos, standards of Rishon from 1,000 years ago. He says, you come to Hashem and you say, "Yu lerotzon imrei fi vehegin libi lefanecha." May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of my heart be pleasing to you. He said, now, how do you dare say that? The words of your mouth were there, but the thoughts of your heart totally weren't there. How do you say that to Hashem? Again, I'm coming on harsh now and trying not to listen to it myself. But this is the 1,000-year-ago standard that the Chovos HaLevavos is putting down. And then he says another thing. He says to Hashem, Slach lanu, your mind is totally somewhere else. He says, you should ask Hashem forgiveness for asking for forgiveness in such a manner. Okay? So what are we supposed to do with that? At the end of the day, we are human. So the answer is that we're meant to, or maybe we should say like this. You know what? Maybe it's just better not to daven. What's that? Oh, maybe it's better not to daven. Or we'll say, you know what? I'll daven when I'm feeling especially elevated and inspired. Oh, so you're saying no. Okay. What?
They'll never do it,
You'll never
but
do it.
Hashem also knows our intention.
Oh,
He also knows that we're human.
Exactly. So this is
Okay.
what we're getting.
So it's worth trying.
This is what we're getting. That's right. That's right.
Right. I read someone that appreciates the battle. I have one rock that you have concentration on, but don't let it defeat you. Go to the next rock, have concentration on that. Even if you fall again, keep going.
That's right. That's right. So this is exactly the point. The point is that Hashem wants our avodah as human beings. He appreciates the fact that, yes, we have all kinds of things flooding our mind and that it's hard to maintain that concentration for such a long time. And he cherishes the tefillos that we do as humans. And I'll say even more than that. This is a beautiful perspective that the Tzvi Meir Zilberberg gave. He said that we know that there are all kinds of different types of karbanos. There's a karbon of a big fat bull. A person decides, you have two people. They both had a stroke of good fortune, and they both want to express their gratitude to Hashem through a karbon. One is a man of means, so he goes to the market and he buys a multi-ton bull. Big fat bull, and he brings that as an oilo to Hashem. The other person also went through a similar experience, but he's a pauper. He can't afford a bull. He can't afford a skinny bull. But he goes to the market. He's not even looking at the bull department. He goes to check out the bird department. He goes to check out the bird department. The bull costs, I don't know, $25,000. The bird department, you're talking about in the 100 range. But he goes and he checks, and the fatter birds are $150. A very skinny bird costs $70. You know what? He can't afford that either. But he goes over to the flower department, Neil. Starts checking out there. And he sees that he can get a flower that's good for a carbon along with the oil it's supposed to come with, $25. Calls his wife, he asks her, can we handle this? She says, $25. Listen, we'll stretch ourselves. We'll pay it over a couple of months. We'll make it work somehow. It won't be simple. We might have to skip butter for breakfast for the next 2 months, but get it. So he comes with his cup of flour and his cup of oil, and the other person is coming in with his big bull. And he feels totally inadequate, right? They're both offering it to the kohen at the same time, and he wants to bury himself in the ground. And he wants to bury himself in the ground. But Hashem says, oh, I cherish the two equally. And in fact, I cherish this one even more because this person's whole neshama is in it. This person is putting all of himself into it. He's going to be suffering the effects of this $25 carbon now for the next 2 months. Him and his wife gave everything they had and beyond. This person bought a $25,000 carbon, but it's okay. He could afford a few more. He spent $70,000 on a new car last week. So Hashem says, I cherish this. So Tzvi Meir Zilberberg says, we have to think of our tefillahs, and if you have kavanah from the very beginning of davening until the very end, intense kavanah, then I'm not talking to you. In fact, I envy you. But if you're, well, a little more like me, and your kavana goes up and down, and maybe you'll have your high points, but other than that, and you try to work on it, then Tzvi Meir Zilberberg says, approach Hashem with an attitude of Hashem, this is what I have to offer. I know it's not so impressive, but I also know that you cherish a minchas ani. I know that you cherish an offering of the poor, even if it's just a flower offering. Now, if I can work on it and I can enhance it, maybe to a dove offering sometimes, maybe sometimes even to a fat sheep offering, maybe once in a while I can get in a fat bull. But the point is that I'm coming and telling Hashem, on the contrary, this will actually enhance the tefillah. If you can actually approach with that sense of Hashem, I know that this is essentially inadequate. And if I were just the one figuring it out, I would say maybe better just not to daven. But you said that you cherish the offering of the poor. In this sense, I'm not at the level of the Chavos HaLevavos. I know that the Chavos HaLevavos offered you a fat bull 3 times a day. But I'm a poor man in this sense. Poor woman in this sense. And here I'm offering it up with that humility. So that humility, that sense of inadequacy, on the contrary, you're telling Hashem that I'm awed by the fact that you want my tefillah in this state. And that actually enhances your sense of awe and gratitude to Hashem. That takes your objectively poor tefillah, but enhances its value and gives it a lot of value. But what's very key here is this is why. So if we say, oh, a minute, if Hashem understands us and understands where we're coming from, so why is it important to get into all these discussions? Why do we need to look at the Chavos HaLevavos' Mishalim? They're not relevant to us. But the answer is they are. We can use them to enhance our tefillahs very greatly. Because if we just come and say, hey, look, Hashem, look what I did for you today. I have a half a bracha with kavana, right? So that might earn you a raised eyebrow. But if you come to Hashem and say, three out of the 18 were with kavana, I would feel like maybe better just like to shelve this tefillah. But you're telling me that you know, give it to me. I want it in that state. So I'm offering it to you with a sense of humility and awe. That actually steps up the level of your tefillah that much more, makes it that much more appealing to Hashem. This is what we see later in the sefer. The whole Shaar HaKniyah is about that. Shaar HaKniyah is the Shaar of humility, as in the more we can properly understand where we stand with Hashem, instead of feeling like, oh, Hashem, I'm going to do you a favor now. Look what I have for you. You approach and you offer tefillah, the mitzvah, whatever it is, with the sense of, I can't believe that you want this from me. I'm awed by the fact that you want that relationship with me. Then you have created a very, very valuable dynamic with Hashem, which Hashem cherishes that much. So that's why we do want to understand the objective standard. We do want to understand what theoretically a tefillah really should look like. And then we can offer Hashem our tefillahs with that sense of humility, with that sense of inadequacy, which Hashem will hold very dear. Why does Hashem need our tefillahs? That's the age-old classic question. And the answer is that he doesn't. But, and you know what? I'll give the mashal like this. This is really a mashal to what we've been trying to bring out now. Let's say you appreciate art. And I can offer you a painting of, I don't know, give me a name. Rembrandt. That works. Okay, Van Gogh. Okay, that's art. And then I offer you here. You can either take this, an original Van Gogh, or I offer you a little scrunched up piece of paper with crude scribbling on it. And I say, which would you prefer? I'm not talking about modern art. I know that modern art is the same thing. But no, I'm talking about something that was actually made by a 2.5-year-old, not by a modern artist who knows how to make it look like it's by a 2.5-year-old. And that's why it's worth thousands of dollars. But, and you ask the person, well, hey, which one do you prefer? Obviously, I'll go for the Van Gogh painting. But what happens if that scrunched up piece of paper was made by your 2.5-year-old child? And that child spent 4 hours working on it. Okay. And then they asked your older kid, how do you spell mommy? And they wrote on the bottom, for mommy. All of a sudden, that scrunched up paper with the scribbling on it, a very crude form of something that you can't make out exactly, is going to hold a lot of value to it. You're going to cherish it. Cherish it. How much do you think it's worth? On the contrary, it was worth more as a blank piece of paper. But you cherish the fact that this is an expression of love and closeness by a child. So when we say, what does Hashem need our tefillahs? He doesn't need our tefillahs. But Hashem created a reality where that's exactly who we are. We are his small children. And what he wants is the connection. He has nachas by offering us the connection with him and seeing us take advantage of it and seeing us draw ourselves closer with it. That is, so to speak, what Hashem gets from our tefillahs. It's the nachas of the connection with him. Even that he doesn't need, but he's offering it to us. He's offering us that relationship of closeness in which he says, that's right, you do for me things that a malach might look at it and say, huh? But I say, no, this is something very precious to me because of where it's coming from. Okay, so now having said that, we'll go on in the Cheder Salvavus and let him, yes, bang us over the head a bit. And he says as follows. Well, not bang us over the head, so we'll get to the banging over the head part. But he's laying down for us what the real ideal picture to strive for is. See, that's also an important piece of the picture here. Hashem takes how it feels from us at our level, but we are expected to be aiming, to be striving to grow in our tefillos, not just to say, well, I'm human, this is what a human tefillah looks like. No, we do want to be striving to grow and to, yes, offer Hashem, like I said before, I might not be able to come to the level of a fat bull, but I can aim to graduate from a meal offering, from a flower offering. Maybe I can get from there to the level of a skinny dove. And maybe I can get from there to the level of a fat dove. And maybe every so often, I can get in a sheep too. So part of the idea of exposing ourselves to this is not to just sit back and say, well, this is what feelers from a person like me look like. No, we can invest and we can offer more. It's always with that understanding that Hashem cherishes our efforts and to feel the humility and the overwhelmedness of that fact that Hashem is saying, yeah, give me that tefillah as it is. Don't be embarrassed. Give it to me. I want it. But now let's move back to the outer part of tefillah because that's important as well. So he says like this. First of all, clear your mind of any thoughts that are distracting you when it comes to tefillah. And this is what we've been talking about. But he adds, "Achar she'inake atzmo v'yirchatz mikol tinufim." We do put in a lot of external energy into tefillah also. Let's appreciate that part of it. There are a lot of dinim that might sound like technicalities and nitty-gritty that surround tefillah. First of all, you're not allowed to daven with filthy hands. Okay. You're not allowed to daven if you are in a state where you need to go to the bathroom, such that your body actually is unclean on the inside, physically. Okay? You're not allowed to daven in such a state. You have to wash your hands. You shouldn't have human waste on any other part of your body when you're davening. You have to make sure you're clean. You have to make sure you're clean. You have to make sure your clothing are clean. Not only that, you have to make sure that the environment is clean, meaning you're not allowed to daven in a place if there's a dirty diaper on the couch right nearby, right? You can smell it. It's looking very physical right now. It has to be, you have to be with a clean body, a clean presentable body, clean environment, etc. So this requires attention. So let's appreciate that these are not just technicalities, but these are all part of the display of honor that we show for Hashem. Like we come and say, before I'm standing to daven before you, I'm making sure to do this in the most optimal way possible. Therefore, for example, Arizal says, wake up in the morning before you daven shacharis. Naturally, you're going to have to go to the bathroom. You have to go relieve yourself before you daven shacharis. So, again, that might seem like a technicality, but the Arizal says, no, appreciate that. Don't just think of it as, well, I'm not allowed to daven until I do this, but think of it as, I am now actively going about and investing in Hashem's honor. To the extent that the Arizal says that, going to the bathroom before davening, clearing out your body before davening is equivalent to the avodah in the Beis HaMikdash of the Trumas HaDeshen. The first avodah, the daily avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, started with an interesting thing, clearing off the Mizbeach of yesterday's ashes. You don't start the day's avodah before doing that. Now, what's interesting is that it didn't even necessarily require fully cleaning the Mizbeach. That had to be done every so often. But first thing, before bringing any karbanas, was a shovel full of the ashes from yesterday's karbanas off the Mizbeach. And that's not the technicality. Again, this was something that could only be done by a kohen. If the Yisrael would go on to the Mizbeach and do a good sponja, he'd be chayiv misa. So the Arizal says that in terms of each of us as a personal private mikdash, relieving yourself before davening in the morning is actually the equivalent of that avodah of the Trumas HaDeshen in the Beis HaMikdash. So appreciate that when you go about these different technicalities, think to yourself, these aren't just technicalities. It's not just that these are, I'm not allowed to daven until I do this, but here I'm taking another step to show my honor for Hashem, and another step to show my honor for Hashem. Okay, we'll stop here.
No.